And welcome to Here We Stand. I'm your regular host, Kevin Ann at Eco Strong Voice. Welcome. It's September 27th. Songs of Redemption, Hand of Resistance, and the Republic. This is the voice of the Republic. We're here every Sunday, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern on the BBS Radio Network. Many of you are writing in. Actually, over 800 of you have volunteered now to help build the Republic, stop the COVID police state, reclaim our communities through our own assemblies and courts. And you all keep asking a lot of questions, as in, what can happen to me if I do these things? How do we know these things are lawful? The fact is that these questions can only be answered through your own action, your own experience, and by joining and building your own common law republic assemblies. You can read how to do that, Republic of Kanata, K-A-N-A-T-A, republicofkanata.ca. Background is murderbydecree.com, and we have recently acquired more French translation for our work. So very soon on that website, you're going to be seeing material translated into French for our Quebec section, which is rapidly growing. Two of our guests today are being very active in building these common law assembly alternatives. Their names are Anne and Fiona. They're going to be with me in a minute. They have helped to answer those questions on the ground, and we're going to be using the show today to talk about their hard experiences, hard-won experiences, of the pitfalls and the advantages of building common law assemblies, the lessons we've learned, and also how we go ahead now. Now, before they come on, I want to put this into a very pressing context to remind folks, a notice went out this last week from the National Council of Common Law Assemblies, which is the gathering now of delegates from over 40 assemblies across Canada, and they issued a statement that the Government of Canada has until Wednesday, September 30th, that's this upcoming Wednesday, to withdraw all COVID measures, or they will face a campaign of escalating civil disobedience commencing October 1st. Now, to give you an example of why we need that direct non-cooperation and resistance with the government, two news items I want to share with you folks. And these are very important to keep in mind because it's part of what we're dealing with right now. First of all, Crime Minister, as I call him, Justin Trudeau, announced this week that the government has obtained 20 million doses of a coronavirus vaccination from a company. He was all enthusiastic about this. The company is called AstraZeneca. They're based out of England. AstraZeneca has been brought into court numerous times for not only false advertisement, but faking drug test results that have resulted in the deaths of children, because one of their main targets of their drug is children. And they face lawsuits in the hundreds of millions of dollars for that. This criminal pharmaceutical company is now going to be the one, thanks to Mr. Trudeau, who's going to be forcing these vaccinations on people across the country. They have ordered 20 million doses. Might be interesting to see if Justin has shares in AstraZeneca. Look up that company. Second, out on the West Coast, guess what, folks? Woodgrove Mall, that's in the northern suburbs of Nanaimo, Woodgrove Mall has just declared the first mall anywhere in Canada to require mandatory medical testing and masking before you even walk into the mall. Well, guess why? Because the mall was just bought up by a Chinese citizen. She's not even a Canadian. Her name is Wei Hong Lu. She's an investor from China. She's only been here a couple of years, but she's bought up all of Woodgrove Mall. And that application for her to buy it is now before Nanaimo City Council. Well, guess what? The same week that she buys it, she decides that the whole mall now, you have got to be tested medically to walk in, and you have to wear masking. Now, she's breaking the law, of course. She's breaking the Common Law Assembly law, saying all of these measures are illegal. But guess, folks, I mean, it's a non-Canadian, a foreigner is dictating now what Canadians are doing on their own soil. Now, of course, she can do that legally because, of course, her buddy Justin Trudeau removed all corporate restrictions on corporate investment in Canada and allowed them to station their troops. We've had three separate sightings of Chinese troops operating in the Gulf Islands and Salt Spring Island. And so this is happening on the ground, folks. This is why we need to actively resist it. I expect everybody in Nanaimo with a conscience to go to the next city council meeting and oppose the application by Wei Hong Lu to buy up Woodgrove Mall and to impose these measures on Canadians. Again, she's a foreigner, not even resident here. So this is some of the urgency of what we're talking about. And today we're going to go into the details of the one thing that makes our movement unique here in Canada is that we are talking about people taking back power. We're not talking about protests. We're not talking about lobbying your MP or voting in the upcoming elections because the politicians have removed themselves from any accountability. They brought in laws saying you can't sue them anymore. So why ratify your own slavery by marking a ballot? We're not doing any of that. We're saying people need to take back their power in their own communities by setting up common law assemblies and their own courts. And those laws are valid. We're going to talk about that today. So that's my rant leading into the show. I hope you're all equally as upset as I am. And I'm going to invite now Fiona and Anne to join us. Hello, folks. How are you?
Hi, Kevin.
Hi, Kevin. Hello.
Good. Now, you know, I mean, it's one thing to get angry about this stuff, and that it's another to look over the hard-won lessons that we've acquired over the last little while. And I know both of you have been involved in Vancouver Island in various assemblies, and I know that you've been present in three of them. And one of the things that we've encountered, of course, is a major takedown of these assemblies. We've had infiltration, we've had black ops, smear campaigns, the usual kind of thing that our movement encounters. But it's interesting, it's happening right here on the West Coast with, you know, right at the same time that we have this massive Chinese incursion. So I wanted to talk a little bit about that, but get into a deeper discussion of some of the lessons we're learning and the way forward. Do either of you want to jump in with anything that I've said or any thoughts of your own?
You know,
you go ahead.
Go ahead.
Oh, okay. Well, it's been, we really need to do something, and we've got to be together in that. What I've noticed with the assemblies that I've been part of is they're, you know, everybody's doing great. They're all on the same page, and then all of a sudden something disrupts them. It's usually at the point where they make a decision to either become an assembly or create some bylaws or really take a step forward to defend themselves. And at that point, there seems to be disruption either from, you know, new people coming in who don't agree with it or people that were already there that don't agree with it. They just, or just fear of doing something. I would say the Parksville Assembly would be a prime example of this, simply because they, you know, they came together, great group of people. They were all on the same page, or so it seemed. They took action, and then when it took time to back up that action, everything fell apart.
Now, talk a little bit about, I mean, we both had that experience, and but unfortunately, I became the focus of this, as is easy to do, because there's been 20 years of a long RCMP-initiated black ops campaign against me. And it's convenient to draw on that if you want to get people alarmed and everything. But what I found really strange was that these were people who knew me. These were people who didn't have any problem with me until all of a sudden a few people show up and they turn 180 degrees around. So do you have any kind of thoughts about how that happened so easily and so efficiently?
Well, I think that you've done a lot for Canada. You've been very active for 25 years. You've probably made enemies along the way, is my guess. But you've stepped up in a way that nobody else has. You know, as far as I'm concerned, you stand with some of the great men in history and even more recent history, like Gandhi and Robert Kennedy Jr., Nelson Mandela, Martin Luther King. You actually did something with your life. You sacrificed a home family life that we've all had, you know, a nice, comfortable family life, or many of us. And you stepped outside of that cocoon and worked to expose genocide in Canada. And, you know, I'm not even sure how you were able to survive that for 25 years. How did you do that?
I wasn't. But, yeah, this is what's perplexing, because, you know, we had an experience where we were talking to one of the members of the Parksville Assembly, and he was, you know, saying exactly the same thing. He was expressing real loyalty to not simply me, but what we represented, which was an attempt by people to take back their own power in their communities. And then the next thing we know, literally that same night, he's up in the Assembly denouncing me. Now, people don't do that unless either they have a serious problem, which I didn't detect, right, or they were paid or sent in the first place to create that kind of divide and conquer thing. And, you know, in my book, The Whistleblower Manual, we go into this. It's nothing new. It's the FBI call it badjacking. They've destroyed numerous big political movements by doing that. You target the most effective, you know, people in a movement and get people to hate them and literally start tearing the group apart. We don't have to worry about cops at the door when the state can get us to tear ourselves apart. And that certainly is going on, and it's a warning to groups across the country. So this is one of the reasons we're talking about that. Fiona, do you have anything to add about this, like from your experience?
I think Anne touched on some of that for sure. I think it's a whole bunch of factors happen where a group gets together and they're not necessarily the Parksville group, but I'll speak, you know, Victoria. We get together so fast, and it's so idealistic. And even when Kevin does explain some things later, when the doubts creep in, they forget that he's already answered some questions. They forget. Of course, they've only heard it once, right, maybe? So they forget, and it's mixed with not knowing common law. And so then that fear, what's going to happen when the rubber hits the road, like Joanne, like Anne said, that you have to, you know, when they're ready to move forward, there's the doubts. And then combine that with, yeah, not knowing common law, and then the smearing. There's smears in there. And so it's uncharted territory. And we're trying to pioneer something. And so when you're on the ground of this, it's not established yet. We're establishing it. And so there's all kinds of ways you can get, you know, in your head. I think it was Deborah Gold who said that, one time on your show, she made a good point. There's the police officer in your own mind, right? That goes along with the doubts, I guess, right? And so those different factors seem to like exponentially like work on each other, right? Exponential is not the right word, but it's something like that, you know, where it's all of a sudden, and you can just see the psychology of it. There's a whole psychology of it, and like you can see it playing out in people. And I really do think that also when people are looking at the big picture and they're not getting it, for example, like they think the big picture should be shown clearly. Well, we don't really know the big picture far ahead. Like thinking too far ahead too, you know, combined with, we don't have a workshop, or we don't really yet, or we don't really know how the court thing will work. So then someone gets stuck on that. You know, how do we detain people? Well, this isn't going to work. This can't work. You know, and so then their thoughts just go swirling, and they just kind of spiral out of control, and then they're like, I'm out. You know, and it's a shame. So we want to stop that from happening. You know, of course we can't control smearing, but and you know what I have to say? Just to end on that. The smearing is what I really see the poison. That's where the poison came in and really worked on those doubts and worked on the fact that we're pioneers and we're uncharted and worked, you know, just worked all those different things I just talked about. The smearing just sort of is the last straw and just the final nail in the coffin. I just want to say, Kevin, I'm so sorry, then people... They want to, it is easy. They do want an out at that time, and then it's easy to blame you, right?
Well, yeah, and as a matter of fact, here kind of the raw statistics on this. In British Columbia, these assemblies in the last 5 months were set up after my intervention, and their map was destroyed. They don't exist anymore. This is Vernon and Kelowna, British Columbia, Cowichan, Duncan area, Parksville, and now two in Vancouver, Fraser Valley and Vancouver proper. They've all either collapsed. In one case, the people who signed the charter actually destroyed it. Apparently, the rumor is they burned it. I mean, like, these are extreme reactions. And that's the bad side. The good side is that across the country, I mean, this thing is mushrooming. And I know because I and a few other people are the recipients of these emails. We've had over 800 new volunteers. We estimate there's 109 communities now across Canada where people are picked this up and are running with it. Either, you know, looking at the ideas and talking about it or taking the step of forming an assembly. The Republic now has over 1,200 sworn citizens. I mean, this is growing astronomically. And that's the great potential here. And this is why we're looking at the things that get in the way, because a lot of the people listening in today are those very people who have volunteered, and they're trying to find ways to go around problems, you know, forewarned is forearmed kind of attitude.
Absolutely.
So, you know, one of the things I noticed in Parksville when Anne, you might, I think, you know, I remember talking to you about this earlier.
Yes.
When watching the people in Parksville, now these were fairly affluent, educated people, and yet their emotional reactions were identical to what I've always experienced in the Aboriginal healing, residential school healing circles. Because this is really familiar stuff to me, going back into the 90s and before that in the street ministry I did in Vancouver. Native people gathered together, very crushed, of course, you know, substance abuse, poverty, homelessness, all the effects of this these genocidal schools and the horrible torture inflicted on them at a young age. They had exactly the same responses as people in Parksville. That is, initially they saw me as this great, wonderful guy who's opening, you know, possibilities in their life, and they were finally getting their heads around the thing that had, you know, tortured them their whole life, and they felt very empowered. And yet at the same time, they sat back and expected me to do it. And when I didn't come across, that is, I didn't bring in justice for them in a month, they then get angry at me and blame me. Mm. So you see, those are childish responses emotionally. They're saying, Daddy's got to save us, and when he doesn't, we get angry at him, right? It's this love-hate thing. And it's ironically identical, whether it's an affluent doctor in Parksville or a homeless Native person in Vancouver, the same kind of infantile response. And it's just too unmistakable for me to not notice, right? It's the same process going on. Any thoughts about that at all?
Well, Parksville was really a surprise. They were probably the strongest community in Canada when they formed an assembly and created bylaws. And they had global support, Canada-wide support, and fear crept in, and or people who wanted to give you a hard time. So nothing got done. All of a sudden, they decided they're going to destroy the whole assembly. That's it. It doesn't exist anymore. We don't want any part of it anymore. And then they started blaming you. And what surprised me is, having been present a number of times, I noticed that you were always very patient, very kind, very compassionate. You were very, very clear on if somebody had a question, you answered it, I would say, to the best of your ability, which was normally very clear. If they needed changes or anything, you were very accommodating. This is something you as an assembly can decide together. You put forward ideas for them to adapt to or follow or not. You know, it was totally free, their freedom of choice. And then, you know, everything was fine. Everything seemed very coherent. And then the second they made the bylaw, everything fell apart, and they all started playing the blame game. And a lot of that was directed towards you. And what I thought was really impressive is, as these subsequent assemblies started to fall apart or get confused or definitely lack coherence, you went ahead with the greater council and brought about these bylaws, which actually, in the end, protected all these communities that that were too afraid to step up for themselves, you know, for whatever reason, fear of losing, you know, what they had.
Yeah.
And so, actually, I kind of laughed when I first saw that. I thought these guys are all worried about this target on their back, and you just took it off, all of them, and, you know, just totally removed it from them to protect them. And I don't know how many people really noticed that.
So you're referring to the September 8th, the National Council of Assemblies, when they passed the law that they took the bylaw from Parksville and basically applied it across the country, right? That's
yes.
what you're referring to?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, exactly. And you know what the what is really noticeable as well is that what always happens in these takedowns is the same, and I know it's coming from the same source in the state because it's identical to 20 years ago and everything since then. And it's always followed by a rewrite of history. The whole narrative changes. I was an advisor to the Parksville Assembly and all the other assemblies. And yet the official line they're handing to people is Kevin came in and did all this himself. And he somehow passed this law when I didn't even vote on it. Everybody was unanimous except one person who chaired the meeting. All the people who subsequently attacked us, they all voted for that law. They voted for the bylaw. And I got up and I remember very clearly saying to them, now we have to make this public. Are we all in agreement? They said yes. So I send it out across the country. It stimulates the creation of this national law. We've got all the support. And then they say, look what Kevin did. He sent it out across the country. It's like a total rewrite of history, including in their own minds. They came to convince themselves of their own lie. It's like Fiona says, that yeah, it's a certain amount of fear, but it's more than that. It's a distinct manipulation for people who aren't sovereign in their own mind. And I think that this is a really important thing we need to talk about. You cannot go into this unless you've achieved a certain sovereignty and independence in your own mind, right? Because if you don't, you're immediately swayed by these forces, and you're afraid of what the state might do to you. And that's a big issue here, right?
Yes. Yes, and also if we're not willing to, you know, kind of, I'll say, act from our higher selves, if we're going to bicker amongst each other and point fingers, and we're not going to get anywhere at all. We have to be able to step out, and we're not, you know, it's senseless to fight each other or you. We need to, you know, become a cohesive group where we can actually do something. We aren't the enemy. We aren't the people that are disrupting our world or making, you know, unjust laws, not even laws, guidelines in some points that are being treated as laws. So we have to learn as, you know, and we're all adults, to step into that and step up and realize if things aren't working, we have to do something about it. We can't just sit complacently there and listen to, you know, everything our television tells us to do.
Right. Well, I mean, here's the thing, that when you pass a law, and this is for everyone listening, your assembly of 12 or more people, when you sign a charter, you pass a bylaw, it becomes a law in your community and can then be enforced. And in this case, we're saying the COVID measures are unhealthy, they're unwarranted, and they're illegal. And so on that basis, anyone who tries to force these masks on us is guilty of a crime. They can face arrest, including, for example, this Chinese resident who's come in and declared that her mall now, you have to have a medical test before you walk into it. I mean, that's all a crime now in Canada. And when we in Parksville, when the assembly said we've got to take this step now, that's when the fear quotient went right through the roof. And
yes.
no operative or smear specialist can have any impact unless people cooperate with it. And I think they just made the decision it's better to scapegoat one guy and to convince ourselves that he was the problem, and then we can go back into our illusion that we're going to be safe if we cooperate. I think, wasn't you who told me the group in Duncan who did the same thing? They had a rally, and they were all distancing, and all of a sudden the same people who are condemning distancing are now doing it at their rally.
Oh,
they kind of took
a step
back. They
were doing is checking with the compliance officer to find out if their rally complied. So they were basically complying to protest compliance. It just seemed kind of
and
funny.
Knowing the people who did that, at the meetings, they were all denouncing compliance. They're all saying, you know, we got to go our own way, and suddenly they're good little boys and girls again. So this is some of the difficulties. Now, I don't want to focus too much on this because we're already halfway through the show, and I did want to focus on steps now to take, lessons we've learned. Fiona, any thoughts about anything before we move on to that?
No, we can move on. No, that's good to move on. Yeah.
Like one of the things that
the positive steps
it's been in the news, and oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
You want to move on now to the positive steps and what we've learned. That sounds good. Yes.
Yeah, okay. One of the things that came out of this whole thing and is the state definitely responded. Two examples of that. Facebook and other major sites, very soon after the national law came out on September 8th, they put up a statement. This is fake news. The Canadian government did not pass a law banning COVID measures. Well, that's true. They didn't. We did. You know, their machine mind can't get around the idea that the people, not government, can pass laws, right? But that was directly in response to what we did. And the other thing is, the feds and the BC government announced elections soon after that, a snap election. Premier Horgan in BC says, hey, we're going to have an election quick. I can't believe that that's not unrelated to what we did, because they saw it's like a referendum. People are taking initiative from below, so they've got to cut it off at the pass. And you see, this is how it always works. This is like Sun Tzu says in The Art of War. You take an action, there's a reaction, and it's like tennis. You keep lobbing the ball back and forth. We don't win in one day or a year. It's a long process of struggle, but they are definitely reacting to our initiative. And that's why now it's all the more important to step this up and to be even more forceful. So I want to talk a little bit about that now. What do you think? I want to ask a question to both of you. There's an election being called in BC. Any thoughts about how we in the Common Law Republic movement should respond to that?
Anne, do you have anything to say?
Go ahead, Fiona.
Well,
I
think by voting, we would be accepting more of what's happening now. I don't think it matters what party. It's going to be more of the same rules and regulations and social distancing and compliance, really. We'd just be voting for compliance.
Yeah, I mean, I don't, as much as I can extricate myself from from this organized crime, criminal conspiracy that they call this government, you know, the better. So I personally won't be voting. So I don't know, as an assembly, if we are taking a stance, or I'm not sure, Kevin. What do you think?
It's been debated right across Canada. As a matter of fact, over the last, yesterday even, I spoke at there was a big gathering our Maritime Assembly had. And I should mention to folks that there's three areas in Canada, all in the east, where there's people are organizing, not starting in their community, but a whole district first. You've got a district running from Toronto to Belleville through the strip along southern Ontario. That's one district. There's Quebec as a separate district, because there's so many people there. And people in Quebec are different than English Canada. We can talk about that. They've got their own district. And thirdly, in the Maritimes, they've got an assembly that embraces all four Maritime provinces. And they held a big rally, over 100 people, at a farm outside Halifax over the weekend that I spoke to by Zoom. And one of the guys there, he's an old political activist. He helped get elected a lot of the premiers. He knows a lot of the top liberals. He's on board. He wants to set up a party that campaigns for the Republic. And he said, you know, when we were talking on the Zoom call yesterday, he said, no point running for federal or provincial. It's totally controlled, and they all take the oath of allegiance. But if we ran for a local city council, that's different, because they're more accountable. It's like local cops. They're more accountable to the people. So we talked about the idea of using the election as a platform to put forward the idea of the Republic, but not by saying vote, because by voting, you're handing over authority to Queen Elizabeth and her descendants. Anyone who gets elected takes that oath of allegiance. We say to politicians, you've got to disavow that oath, take a step to have a constitution and a republic. No more monarchy, the people governing. And on that basis, yeah, we can unite with a lot of people, especially since the majority of Canadians want that, and according to recent opinion polls. So that's kind of the perspective coming out across the country generally, is that use it as an education opportunity. But for example, we had the idea that you set up our own Republic polling booths outside the polling stations and tell people, wow, come and mark your ballot over here, vote for the Republic, join the local assembly, walk away from the crown system of voting and all of that stuff. It's all criminal. It's
a great idea.
Got a stand down order. So those are some of the ideas that have come out.
That is a good idea.
Yeah.
So, yeah, go ahead, either of you.
I like it. I like the idea.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Well, it would also let people, people an option to know that there is another option. I mean, not everyone is going to be connected to the assemblies. It would be a good way. It would be good advertising, really. At the same time, there are other options available.
Yeah.
That's right. And, you know, people at election time are more open to thinking about these things. And, you know, it's really important to give history as well. And that's why, you know, we talked a little bit earlier about the whole smear campaign against me. One of the reasons it works so well is people don't understand the history of this campaign or me or anything. They're just going on rumor. And this election very much is in response to what we're doing, because that's happened in a way in the past. When we started a campaign about the residential schools, within a month of the first tribunal we held in Vancouver in 1998 in the summer, the government announced their healing fund right on the wake of what we did, right? So in other words, if you're a residential school survivor, you get money, but you got to sign off any legal action against the people who tortured you or killed your friends. They brought that in right after our tribunal. We bring out, we start publishing the evidence of the tribunal, and they announce the Aboriginal Healing Fund, right? And then all these initiatives, the lawyers step in and limit the actions that happen. They eventually hold their own in-house Truth and Reconciliation Commission in response to our own truth commissions and the ITCCS, the International Tribunal we set up. See, every time we do something, they respond, but they make it look like it's their initiative. So that's why we've got to draw a line in the sand and say, you know, don't vote, don't pay taxes, don't go into their system, keep the money locally, keep the taxes locally. That's one of the campaigns we're starting. So it isn't just us defending ourselves. We're taking back the power and the influence, including the votes. So that's, you know, part of the perspective.
Yes, and you know what, Kevin, you reminded me that I did want to say, getting on, you know, smearing and spreading of misinformation, and speaking of Kanata, I watched I think it was Earth United video, where the guy from South Africa was saying, don't go anywhere near Kevin Annett and Kanata, because Kanata, he said, is just another corporation. Over same as Canada is. Canada is a corporation, the government of Canada. Well, all we'll be doing if we go under Kanata is replacing it with Kanata, and it's the same thing. And now, I didn't watch the whole video. I turned it off after that, but I thought, wow, there they go, spreading misinformation.
Classic
black
ops.
Not at all what Kanata is. And you have said that repeatedly. And it's sort of like I see the same thing that happens with this COVID stuff. They, you know, they give out the message. People are, you know, when you're in fear, right? You're, you know, they can't.
Yep.
They give out the false lies. Sorry, the false narrative. And then the truth is, even if the truth is presented to them, they can't because of the fear. And I kind of see it sort of the same thing happening, where you've already said so many times, Kanata is not over you. It's, you know, it's not like that. The power is always in the hands of the assemblies. And yet, and this is used as proof to show don't have any part of Kevin Annett in his assemblies. And it's incredible how that
is the same thing.
Could you maybe explain that a little bit so that there's some clarity to that, Kevin?
I will. But just on Fiona's point first, it's an assertion. There's no evidence provided. It's just like everything,
right.
Name-calling and assertion.
Yes.
Well, this person obviously never been here. Obviously, the Mohawks and the Iroquois are going to be insulted because it's their word. It actually is pronounced Ganata. And it means where people sit as one around the council fire in our village. And that goes back many centuries, that word. So again, it's like a lie tagged onto this people's fear of a corporate structure. Now, the thing about Gannat is that we're creating it ourselves. We're outside any corporate system. That's why we say, people often ask, well, am I going to lose my medical benefits or pension if we join the Republic? We say no, because the state gives you those benefits and relates to you, including taxing you through your straw man corporate title, the corporate fiction created in by your parents for you when they registered you at birth. And so you can continue to relate to the state through that fictitious title. It's not you anyway, it's just the name. So that's a corporate system. Outside it, we the people, flesh and blood, men and women, are creating a republic from the grassroots. It's not corporate. Right. It will never have a corporate designation because it's our creation. And, yes. You know, so we put that out there clearly, and so their black op is the respond by a total lie. But it confuses people because they don't know any better. And that's standard. Right. I mean, that's one of the most classic features of a black op.
Yeah. Yes, and we have seen a lot of funny ideas going around and people, you know, making assumptions without actually understanding. And what I found within these assemblies, the people seem to be more comfortable making assumptions than actually talking to you about it for clarity.
Yep.
And I found that very disturbing.
Yeah, I think you commented that people would only attack me when I wasn't there.
Yes.
Whenever I was there, this stuff didn't come up. So, I mean, you know, it's not just cowardice, but it's convenient to have a scapegoat when he's an obstruction. It's like in war, men can only kill each other when they're strangers. I remember my grandfather's stories from World War I. They used to go out into no man's land at Christmas and drink with the Germans, and they got to know each other, and after that, they agreed to shoot high. They would never shoot at each other after that. Because you have seen the human being, you can't shoot somebody you know. You can't malign somebody who to their face often. You have to attack an abstraction. And that's why these people attacking me have never met me. They don't know me at all, right? I mean, you guys have met me, right?
I think that's one thing they really should have taken the time to get to know you before making assumptions about you, or at least ask you to your face, okay, I have a problem here. I know there was a problem with the Victoria Group. They had a bunch of questions you weren't able to make it that day, so you came in on a call, a live call, and you answered all the questions, and that just settled people right back down again. But you were given the opportunity by that group to actually answer any questions or concerns they had.
Now, kind of in a broader sense, one thing I want to put to both of you is, and to all the listeners, and by the way, if you've got questions, write in the course of the show. I meant to say this at the beginning. Just write to me, angelfire101@protonmail.com. I'll get your questions and answer them over the air. But one of the things that we do want to discuss is, are assemblies always the best way to go ahead? Because we might be putting the cart before the horse. If you announce an assembly and a lot of strangers show up, you have what's happened on the West Coast, at least. And that is, somebody can slip in and start subverting it. Whereas if you start smaller, and one of the models put forward is you form a cell of three people and you start educating yourself. And the people, Becky said, especially, this is so important. You now have to understand the vision and the principles and feel confident in those beliefs before you can start talking to others about the idea of a republic or an assembly. And so among those three of you, first of all, it can't be infiltrated because it's two other people that you know fairly well. You're just educating yourselves and acting as a small group. Maybe you go out and do some issue some flyers or do some public work, and then you come back and assess how it went. When you get four of those groups that have been operating that way, that's 12 people, and you can form an assembly. But that's done with a solid foundation of action and awareness of each other first, familiarity, rather than a bunch of strangers getting together and trying to create something that can be then taken down because of the lack of knowledge and confidence. And I think that's a model I want to put out, the cell group structure, building up even smaller unit than an assembly. You know, and just your thoughts on any of that.
I think it's a great idea. I think it's important to know people to know that people have your back. It's really it was really hard to see in some of these assemblies that people you thought had your back don't have your back. I found that really disturbing. So I think it's better to have small core groups that that get to know each other well, get to trust each other, and have each other's backs. It just opening it up to a whole bunch of people, which was, you know, it was supposed to be a wonderful idea where we could all come together and we could create something together, but you only need one person to destroy that, just one person with an yep. agenda to destroy that, or doesn't understand yep. it, or whatever, somebody that infiltrates it, and it's gone. It's gone in an instant. Doesn't matter how many weeks or months you've worked on something, it's just over.
Yeah.
And sometimes very extremely, like the one group wanting to burn the charter, and it's like, this is, you know, we're going back to, you know, a time in history that our forefathers, our grandparents and our dads protected us from. You know, they fought to protect us from this kind of behavior, and we're doing it. It's like burning books.
Well, that's
I found
ironic.
It really disturbing.
People.
So I think we have to find a way to to build trust with each other and to move forward.
And I wonder.
And that's ironic.
Even...
The very.
Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead, Fiona. Sorry.
No, you go ahead. I'll wait.
Well, I was just going to say it's ironic that the very people, you know, condemning the government and Big Pharma and everything are acting exactly the way they do. You know, they're not honoring the wishes of the assembly. They're backstabbing people behind their back. If we don't change that way of behaving with one another, why even do any of this? We're just going to replicate the criminals in power.
Well, one of the things is we can have rallies, we can do handouts, you know, make nice flyers and stuff like that. And then when our kids ask us, what did you do to save us? We can say to them, oh, well, we were making flyers and we were worrying about the wording on our constitutional and we had some great assemblies. Oh, and good potlucks. But we actually didn't have time to do anything to save you guys because we were too busy.
Yeah.
And I think that needs to be kept in mind. This is for our kids. This is about our kids, and we really need to protect them.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure, right? Kids, grandchildren. I was even thinking, you know, we could even do a hybrid. If you had someone that was, like, sort of, like, trying to get the main part of the assembly going, some of the structure, working on that, and having small cells going out at the same time and then building up.
Right.
That's another possibility. I think sometimes we get bogged down in the committees with wanting to get making decisions, too. We get too bogged down in the meetings and discussions, right? So I like your idea of it's really about taking action, right? Education. For us and businesses and the public, supporting small businesses, et cetera, and taking action. So that's the crucial piece, right? Not like Anne said, you know,
right.
endlessly discussing that, you know. So, and I do think at the same time, having a really good, strong core, that assembly of 12 people who, like you said, Kevin, are sovereign in their own minds. And just get it where every cell of your body just gets that what that really means, and then wow, that's powerful. Right. And we are trying to. The last thing I want to say about that is we're you know, we have in Victoria many many wonderful who I believe are wonderful people who are just really wanting to get on board and get on board on specific issues. And so rather say than inviting them right into our assembly to make up the 12 or whatever, slotting them into subcommittees and see how they do there first and see
right.
how that, you know, see
yeah.
how that plays out and then move on from
there. We've got to be flexible, you know, and again, that's
yeah.
principle in art of war. You don't, if a tactic works you don't solidify it. It isn't the only way to operate because then you can be outflanked. you've got to do a combination of methods. And so I agree that, you know, do the small cell groups, encourage direct action by those small groups, but also learn the lessons and create a structure. Because, look, a lot of people are going to get awakened by the system. In October, it's going to get a lot worse. And that's one of the reasons that the National Council said we need to start civil disobedience actions October 1st, because obviously the government's not going to back down. And they're going to use this election to say, look, everyone's approved of these police state measures. They all voted. We're not doing anything undemocratic. So we're going to not only boycott that election, but use it as a springboard to say we have to take action now to take back the nation directly. And there's different ideas being planned about that. And it involves direct action. It involves, like, in one of the things they talked about in the Maritime Assembly is, let's go into the courthouses and reclaim them. Let's open our common law courts right in there and get the police on board, you know, and take back the buildings.
Wonderful.
I mean, that's one thing that you know, and you don't even need a lot of people to do that. That's the thing. You need a small, determined group who don't back down. That's our lesson, right?
You know, I think that really needs to be made clear, because that comes up. That is said to me so much. I see this so many times. Oh, well, why even join your movement that you need millions? Like, well,
no,
we're building the movement,
no, you don't.
Number one. And number two, you don't. You know, yes, it helps as we go on. We'll get more people. But it's strategy. It's organizing with a group. Like you said, you can be very effective in a smaller group and strategizing. So. And you know,
you know
what,
a lot of people are going to...
Yeah.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Oh, I just wanted to say, tag on...
Go ahead.
Just to tag on quickly.
No, you're
good. Tag on quickly. Like, I was thinking today, too, just before the show, Kevin, I think it is really important for us to get our structure really solidified. And I want people to know... I'll just say that first. Because, like you said, in October... I think a lot of people are going to be turning to us. People that doubted before, October and beyond, right? People that didn't believe, or the smearing worked on them, or whatever. Like, okay, the door's always open, you know, and they might come back and go and look to us. And so the more we have our structure set in place and be established, I think the better, right? Obviously,
you're right?
Right? Speak the obvious. But, and the other thing I wanted to say was that I think people really, when they're setting up the assemblies, they do really need the support. They do need guidance. They do need some workshops. They do need maybe some YouTube. You talked about, you know, training. And because people are like, well, we want to do this. How do we do this? And, oh, Kevin's across the country. And, oh, I don't have a book. Or what do we do? You know, and I feel for them. And, that, you know, so, and it is a daunting, big thing to set up. At the same time, if we can do it in Victoria, anybody can. We're not superhuman people. We're not lawyers or anything. Like, we're regular folk, and we set it up with Kevin's help. I mean, that was really big that you were on the island for us, right? So that's one of the biggest reasons that we have this success, right? But really, I want to get across that people can do it, and that the structure is actually not that complicated. It is simple. And if I could ever help someone, if we could ever help support other assemblies, we would absolutely do it. And it wouldn't take long either, you know. And we're here for them. And I just want people to know it's actually not that complicated. And it is doable, you know. Yeah. And it helps to have a printer. If you have someone in your group with a printer, you know. But there's always staples or whatever. But, yeah, I just wanted to say that it is doable. And important.
That's great,
really,
Fiona.
Organized and structured, yeah.
And also, just giving Kevin a plug
ahead,
for a minute, his books are a great resource. He's already set it out.
Especially
So if people read the books, we find that people in the meetings, if they've read the books, they can move along much faster, because they've already got an idea about assemblies, how they work, and
that's right,
and how this structure is, and what the bylaws mean, and it's all in his books.
That's right.
Yeah, and just for people's knowledge, you can get the books on Amazon, and also murderbydecree.com, which is my site. You can see them all listed. The three ones we really push are the Common Law Training Manual, the Manual for Whistleblowers, and Establishing Liberty, the Case for Canada, for the Republic. And now we have in bulk those copies. We can get them to you. We can also, even in an emergency, send you the PDF of these books if you want to get going right away. We can't keep up with the orders, but anyone who wants copies of that, and also we have a little mini bulletin for new members, what to do, how to do it, different resources for you. You can get all of that right to two places. Council of Assemblies at protonmail.com. That's Council of Assemblies, plural, one word, Council of Assemblies at protonmail.com. And also me, Kevin Ann, at angelfire101 at protonmail.com. And again, the site, republicofcanada.ca. Any final words from either of you? We've only got a few minutes left.
Well, I'd like to thank you for everything you've done. People who haven't met Kevin, I would just say don't listen to the garbage that you hear. He's a very kind man. He's one of the few men that stepped up for children in the way he has. And right now, I mean, we saw the genocide with the natives, and right now it could be a genocide of our kids and grandkids. So I really think it's important to learn about assemblies, learn about what you can do, and not wait for somebody to come and save us. We're the people who are going to save us. And
right.
Kevin
Thanks,
is helping to facilitate that.
Fiona, any
yeah.
thoughts?
I wish I could add something pithy to add to what. And I'll probably figure something after, but I think she expressed that very well.
Well, and your comment just now was so essential, Fiona, that
yes.
people are going to start flocking into this movement, and we've got to be organized beforehand. And people, here's the basic message to everyone. We are going to govern ourselves. That's the message of our movement. The bottom line message is that we not only take back power in our communities and establish our own laws and enforce them, but a republic grows up from that basis, from those roots. We create the final republic based on our local self-governance. That's the whole idea. If you want to be part of that, again, write to Council of Assemblies at protonmail.com and Republic of Canada. That's the important site, republicofcanada.ca. And I really would love to have you both back on. You've got a wealth of knowledge and on-the-ground experience, unlike all our critics. And a lot of people in the movement. And so I do want to invite you back again. And Fiona, I know that you've had direct experience taking on local Starbucks in Victoria. I do want to hear about that next week. Maybe you'll come back and describe some of that for us and some campaigns
sure.
that could arise. And thank you again, Anne, for your great
one thing,
persistence yourself in coming to all these assemblies. And I really appreciate your presence at those assemblies because you're a witness on the ground.
Could you just explain what the three stars mean on the Republic of Canada flag? I think it's important for people to understand that it doesn't represent a corporation.
No, in 30 seconds, I'll do that. The flag represents the three stars of the English, French, and Indigenous founding nations. The blue lines represent the Tuorowampum Treaty that established the original equality and peace among all our founding nations. This is Kevin Annett, Eagle Strong Voice. A thank you. We're going to end on a song by Johnny Cash, which is kind of a judgment song for those people who know they're doing wrong and for the evil forces in this world that are trying to destroy humanity. It's called Gonna Cut You Down. We'll be back next week, same time, same place. Stay strong, everyone. Kevin Annett.